Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the Grill Room is definitely on our tab. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
All we can say, it's beyond description. What a Ryder Cup. What an experience. Congratulations to both Team USA and Team Europe. They did all their best and provided some great golf shots and obviously some great theater. Alex is sitting alongside of me. It didn't turn out the way we wanted it to turn out, but your thoughts?
Well, wait a second. I'm just lost here. This is the same mentality that has gotten us to where we are right now. They did all their best. You really think that's true? I'm not saying that they didn't try, but do you think that they did their best?
They tried to do their best.
Okay, but did they do their best?
No, because I don't know what their best is.
Well, I think you do know. I think you do know that.
Did Europe do their best?
Well, it was good enough.
Oh, okay.
It was good enough.
That's what I meant.
Yeah, it was good enough.
I don't know what their best is. Well, you don't either.
I can tell you one thing, that Patrick Reed's best isn't missing a foot and a half putt. I can tell you that. I can tell you that there's a lot of other things that you could say, and I think Patrick Reed played great. But, I mean, you can't say they did their best. I mean, you know, the American team, on average, is capable of much more than they showed this week. I don't think there's any question about that. They're capable of that.
They're capable of that.
Right. You know, so they didn't do their best. They may have tried hard, okay?
Tried their best.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they tried their best either. They tried hard. They just didn't accomplish the goal. I mean, at some point, someone has to say that. At some point, you have to say, which I guess Watson did say, is we got beat. We got beat like a drum again, and the question is why. I mean, I just can't. I don't want to pander on this topic.
You don't want to pander, but our listeners are very interested in your opinion. Nope. You've been to enough Ryder Cups. You're on the inside on a lot of stuff. You were here not too long ago playing golf with Tom Watson. I mean, who has better insight than Alex Maselli? And now you say you don't want to pander.
Right. I don't want to pander to the situation. I mean, I think it's very clear that we got beat again, and we have no reasonable way of trying to figure this out. Right now, after 2008, and I had somebody walk up to me and say, the only reason why Paul won in 2008 wasn't because of what Azinger did or the pod system or anything else, is because he had Nick Faldo on the other side. If we had Nick Faldo every 2 years, maybe we wouldn't have a problem. Well, I don't agree with that, but it's just funny. I mean, what we're basically saying is if the Europeans don't screw up, we can't win. And I just don't agree with that either. How is it that the best team on paper generally, year after year or 2 year after 2 year, can't find a way to win this event? Well, how is that?
Well, one of the reasons that I've been thinking about, Alex, and since the competition began, on Friday, I keep looking at the 12 players that are representing the United States. And I try and focus on, well, who's the leader as far as a player on this team? And I couldn't come up with one.
Well, I agree. Well, if there's a leader on this team now, it was two rookies, which is really not what you're looking for. You're not looking for two rookies to be the leaders of the team. So that's questionable. I think we were actually amongst ourselves saying, who's the go-to Ryder Cup player on this team? Who's the go-to Ryder Cup player over the last 10 years? You know, who's the go-to? When was the last time we had a go-to Ryder Cup player? We go all the way back to Lanny Watkins in 1983, for God's sake. You know, Lanny Watkins, when everything was on the line, sat there and hit this unbelievable shot into 18 at PGA National to win the point to save the Ryder Cup for the U.S. We don't have anybody like that. Who's going to be the guy? Who's the guy that's going to sit up there and make that shot?
Who's the guy that wants to be in the position to have that shot? That's my question. Who on this team wanted to play the last hole in the last match with the Ryder Cup on the line?
I don't know. You know, those days of the President's Cup of Tiger and Ernie going down, what was it, four holes? Four holes in South Africa. Those are gone.
In the dark.
Those are gone. Those are gone. You know, I mean, that was pure guts. I wasn't there, but I know. It was pure guts. We don't have that. We do not have that right now.
I'll tell you what we do. We're going to be talking through the entire show about this Ryder Cup. So let's start on some positive notes, Alex, and try and paint the picture for our listeners. Number one, the media, the staging of this event was absolutely first class.
Yeah, this venue was a great venue for the Ryder Cup. There's no question about that. The venue was great. So anyways, that's one of the things. That's a positive. What they put into this Ryder Cup, the amount of staging in regards to stands, in regards to, you know, boards, you know, that you can see things, the television boards, the jumbotrons, the scoring, the tents, the facilities in the media center, with the exception of the food, were first class. There is no question. And that makes you understand how big this event really is. When you go out there and look around, and you see 2,300 seats around a mini amphitheater on the first tee, you understand that this is no, we're not talking about what this used to be in 1993 or 5 or 7 or 9 or even 2002, for goodness sake. And this is a big deal, and it's going to only get bigger. I mean, Hazeltine is going to have to step up, and the PGA Americans have to step up and make it even bigger than it was here, which is hard to believe, but I'm sure they will come through.
You know, the template that was utilized here does put a lot of pressure on the PGA of America because they don't want anybody to attend that one in 2016 and say, well, not quite as nice as it was in 2014. Their goal is to try and make it better, and I don't know, honestly, what area they could make it better.
Well, you'll see, right? I mean, they'll give them the opportunity. They're sitting down. They'll sit down in the next probably couple of weeks or within a month, and they'll sit down and they'll start planning. And they probably already have preliminary plans, but they're going to go ahead and they'll probably start making adjustments where they saw things this week that they thought was good. And they will make sure that when we get to Hazeltine in 16, it's going to be something to behold. In fact, actually, they'll have the plans ready. I know we'll have a year-out festivities. Well, heck, it'll be a year from now. We'll be in Hazeltine a year from now. We'll go through everything, and they'll pretty much know what they're doing.
Well, the Minnesota fans certainly appreciate golf, so that's not going to be a problem at all. Now, one other thing, I feel obligated to mention it to our listeners. Our accommodations this week, the infamous, I want to say, Snooze Box Hotel. And I can hear people already saying, Snooze Box Hotel? What is that? Well, what it is, it's a temporary hotel that they constructed on the property. They can do it in a matter of days, put up a 320-room hotel. That all sounds very great. Now, the first day we got there and they gave me the key, I opened the door and turned to see if Janice, our executive producer, was behind me, and my face hit the far wall, and I only turned for half a second. We did have wall-to-wall carpeting, though, Alex, a nice little 2x3 rug that was on the floor, The first morning, I'll never forget it the rest of my life. I'm washing my hands and face in the bathroom sink. I'm brushing my teeth in the bathroom sink. I'm combing my hair in the bathroom mirror, but I'm still sitting on my bed. I mean, but it's not all negative because I found out one day this week in the morning, we woke up and it was a little chilly, and you know that because you've been here at the crack of dawn. And I said, oh, golly, what do we do now? So what did we do? We turned the hairdryer on for 10 seconds. The room was very toasty right after that. So it's not all bad. Look for these Snooze Box hotels in the future because they're going to be coming to America. We talked to some people. Matter of fact, they even have their eyes, believe it or not, to try and construct a Snooze Box hotel down in Augusta.
Oh, geez. All right, look, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk more Ryder Cup. You're listening to The Grill Room presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses powered by Golf Week. And oh, by the way, make sure that you stay on and listen because not only will we hear from Captain Tom Watson and Captain Paul McGinley, but we're going to get a chance to talk or listen to a rant, and I say rant to some extent, by Phil Mickelson, who clearly was trying to throw Tom Watson and the process of this week under the bus. We'll be back.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Thanks for joining The Grill Room. We're coming to you from the site of the 2014 Ryder Cup in Scotland. And what a Ryder Cup it was. As Alex said before the break, said we're going to hear from the teams. So let's first hear from Captain Tom Watson.
Well, it's a real disappointment, obviously, to my players and to and me. We came over with expectations higher than the results. I have to give credit to the European team; they were spot on. They took us down in the alternate shots. That's where the matches really turned in the alternate shots. Well, yeah, the obvious answer is that our team has to play better. That's the obvious answer, and they do. I think they recognize that fact, that somehow, collectively, 12 players have to play better. I couldn't be prouder of my players. My players gave it everything they possibly had. I know that this disappointment will last a long time for them, as it will for me, but we can learn from it. Our team wasn't up to winning this week as far as the Europeans team was. They played better golf than we did. Listen, the Europeans kicked our butt. The bottom line is they kicked our butt. They were better players this week. I mean, we had a chance today. We started off, got everything in the red, almost everything in the red, and then they turned it on us. And that's what champions are made of. You know, they get down, then they come back and win. They kicked our butts, and that's the bottom line.
All right, that was Tom Watson, and now let's hear from the victorious European captain, Paul McGinley.
I did the easy bit, they did the hard bit, and I really mean that. I know what it's like to be there as a player. I know how difficult it is to play in a Ryder Cup. I know when your heart is jumping out of your chest, how incredibly excited and nervous you are. But we relished this challenge. We did it with a smile on our face, which was so important, and we did everybody proud, I think. There's nothing like the adrenaline of walking to that first tee, with your home support bellowing at you. It's a great thrill, and I wanted the players to enjoy that and drink it in and enjoy every moment of it, because your career goes very fast. I'm now in the twilight of my career, and I've loved being captain. It's been fantastic. But there's nothing beat playing what these 12 guys have just enjoyed today. There's nothing can compare to that.
All right, so that was Watson and McGinley. Bob, your initial thoughts on both of them?
Well, it's a very difficult question to answer, and I'll tell you why. I really like Tom Watson. I really do. And I wasn't positive that, you know, he would be the right man for the job. And maybe he was, and maybe the players didn't play well. I've been to enough Ryder Cups to know that every time a captain sends out some players, he fully expects those players to deliver a point. And when those players do deliver a point, the captain gets a lot of credit. When those players don't deliver the point, the captain gets a lot of blame. So it's a very, it's kind of tough to analyze how a captain performed when really it's the performance of the players. You alluded to it in the beginning, saying that you didn't feel that, you know, the American players played their best.
Right. Well, they didn't play their best. There's no question about that. But how do you get the best out of a player? And it's the same question. The age-old question is, how do you get the best out of a student if you're the teacher? What do you have to do? And so the question is why is it that our captains cannot get the best out of our players and the European captains can get the best out of the European players?
Well, my answer to that question may be oversimplified, but it's on the European side, the players get together and pick their captain. On the United States side, the PGA of America gets together and picks their captain. So obviously, on the surface, you're going to see players performing better for a captain that they picked. They certainly don't want a captain they picked to fail, whereas on the U.S. side, you know, they didn't have anything to do with the process, and, you know, maybe they're not all in.
91, 99, 2008, the players didn't pick the captain. So are we saying that those were exceptions to the rule?
93, you mean?
93, 98, 99, 2008. Are those exceptions to the rule?
Probably. Europe's won 8 out of 10. I mean, that's a pretty good, that's a steady trend in the wrong direction.
So you're suggesting, if we take that to the logical conclusion, you're suggesting that if the players had something to do with picking the captain, then we would have a better chance.
I think that.
Okay, all right.
I don't know that.
Okay, so then my question to you would be, and this gets to the Phil Mickelson comments, if that's the case, don't you think the players should be involved with the process in regards to picking who should be on the team?
Yes, I do.
Okay. That did not happen in this case.
Right.
Okay. And personally, and I'm not saying it has to be a pod system, but I think anybody would want to be involved in the discussion about who's going to be on the team. If it's three guys or four guys or whatever it is, I think they'd want to be involved. And I think when you start from a position of I'm the captain, you're the player, I will make the decision, you will have to live with it. I think when you start from that position, it can only go one way.
I think you bring up a valid point there, and you did mention the name Phil Mickelson. There were some comments made in his press conference. Let's give a listen to that, and then we'll talk about it.
There were two things that allow us to play our best, I think, that Paul Azinger did. One was he got everybody invested in the process. He got everybody invested in who they were going to play with, who the picks were going to be, who was going to be in their pod, who when they would play, and they had a great leader for each pod. In my case, we had Ray Floyd, and we hung out together, and we were all invested in each other's play. We were invested in picking Hunter that week. Anthony, Kim, and myself, and Justin were in a pod, and we were involved on having Hunter be our guy to fill our pod. So we were invested in the process. And the other thing that Paul did really well was he had a great game plan for us, you know, how we were going to go about doing this, how we were going to go about playing together, what golf ball format, what we were going to do if so-and-so's playing well, if so-and-so's not playing well. We had a real game plan, and those two things helped us bring out our best golf. And I think that you know, we all do the best we can, and we're all trying the hardest. And I'm just looking back at what gave us the most success, because we use that same process in the President's Cup, and we do really well. And unfortunately, we have strayed from a winning formula in 08 for the last three Ryder Cups, and we need to consider maybe getting back to that formula that helped us play our best.
Well, we heard Phil, what he said. He wondered, basically, why we went away from the winning formula in 2008 under Paul Azinger. And Captain Tom Watson basically said he had a different philosophy than Phil, and he was going to use his philosophy here in 2014. Am I at the meat of it?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And the problem was is his philosophy didn't provide a comfort level for the players to be invested in what he was doing. I mean, quite honestly, in discussions I've had with players and others that were involved in the process, Tom made all the decisions on his own, ultimately on his own, with some input from his assistant captains or vice captains, and little input from the players. And had no input from the players at all until they got here. Had no discussions with the players. Now, why someone would say, well, doesn't that seem a little odd? Not only does it seem odd, it seems bizarre in this environment that we have today. During the President's Cup, there's usually three or four guys that are with couples, that couples goes to, and they sit around and they talk about this stuff. They're the elder players. Davis Love absolutely brought people into the process. Corey Pavin, to some extent, brought people into the process. Paul Azinger, I know, brought people into the process. So all these people were involved, all these players were involved in the process, involved and invested in what the future of this team would be, except for in this particular scenario. And it's very hard for them to understand why. And then when you see the numbers on the board and you see that they lost and you hear people talking about this and that, some of them are like, well, you know, I mean, you can say what you want, but our participation was basically minimized because of this process.
You know, the first red flag, Alex, that went up for me after Friday's play, when Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed played very well, and Jordan Spieth came in the media room and said that he was told that if he played well in the morning, he'd be playing in the afternoon. He played very well in the morning and wasn't playing in the afternoon. And I stopped and thought about what I just listened to. Here's a 21-year-old rookie coming into the media room saying that he's having problems with the captain.
That's exactly right. And I don't know if it was a, you know, misinterpretation, what it was, but the bottom line is this captaincy seemed to have these problems throughout. If it wasn't Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, it was Phil Mickelson and Keegan Bradley and Webb Simpson. I mean, those are problems you cannot have if you're a captain of a U.S. Ryder Cup team. Those are problems you cannot have if you're trying to win the Ryder Cup back for the first time since 2008. Those are the problems that you don't want. And when your team, when you lose the team, how many times you hear that in a coaching scenario, be it in college, be it in professional sports, when you lose the team, when you lose the locker room, you've lost. And there's a good possibility that the locker room was lost sometime during the last day or two.
I think that possibly Tom Watson, he was brought in to try and reverse the tide. It had been going Europe's way so long that he made a decision that, hey, it hadn't been working before. The PGA of America has entrusted me to do it my way. And I'm going to do it my way. And he fully believed that his way was going to win.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. I don't think you shouldn't change your way. I mean, everybody knew what his way was before he got here. You know, everybody at the PGA of America, even the players knew. They would talk to former players. They knew the deal. They knew exactly what they were getting themselves into. But it didn't work this time. And even Watson, in asking him the question, would it work? Do you think, are you still invested in your process? He said yes. I mean, he's 65 years old and he ain't moving off the dime. This is where he is. This is my deal. This is how I do things. So that's what it is. So bottom line is it didn't work. So we move forward. We're going to be moving forward to Rupert Bell in the next segment. Before I get there, I want to tell you all that, as you all may know by now, Bob has a new ebook available. It's a complete history of the fierce but friendly competition. I hate that, fierce but friendly competition. From 1927 onwards, leading into the matches at Glen Eagles, where the United States got their rear ends kicked, the Ryder Cup, golf's greatest event, is now available wherever e-books are sold or by going to RyderCupBook.com. That's RyderCupBook.com. Bobby, I don't know. I can't wait for you to write this next one. You can write all about 2014.
That certainly is not going to be easy. Let's take a break right now. We'll have more on the Ryder Cup when we return. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, powered by Golf Week.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
Want to improve your golf game? Improve your vision. Callaway and Transitions Optical have created Callaway Neox Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, designed to enhance visual performance while playing golf. They automatically adjust color and darkness, sharpen depth perception, and offer superior clarity. You'll have more accurate distance vision and be better able to see the terrain and contours all day, regardless of weather and light conditions. Buy Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses at CallawayGolf.com or learn where to get a pair in your prescription at transitions.com/sunwear/Neox.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Sitting in with us again, boy, oh boy, a very proud Englishman right now. His name's Rupert Bell. He's the Grill Room's European side of things. Rupert, U.S. team tried to make a comeback, but just couldn't catch Team Europe.
I think the Americans flattered to deceive. I think it was a brave shout to put Jordan Spieth and Pat Reed first up, and I suppose there was a period for about half an hour where you suddenly thought, well, hello, this is looking a bit more positive. But unfortunately, the Americans have forgotten how to get over the winning line, and obviously Jordan Spieth was given a summary golf education by Grzimak of how to play match play, because the 21-year-old suddenly didn't have any answers when GMAC got on a roll, and that was the ultimate golfing match play education. And from then, the wind went out of the American sails, and they were soundly beaten, with Jamie Donaldson doing the business in the end. 16.5 and 11.5. It compares to the Valhalla disaster for Europe when Nick Faldo was in charge. I wouldn't say Tom Watson's captaincy was in the Faldo class, but clearly he did not have his team, and I've never been to a press conference at the end of an event where clearly the disharmony was just itching to be revealed to one and all.
Your thoughts on that, Alex?
Itching to be revealed. It is quite interesting, isn't it? You know, I have to say, Phil Mickelson, when he wants to use the media, he finds a way to use the media. There's no question about it. He was on Golf Channel. He was on, I think he might even talk to the British press too beforehand. And then he decided to come out with it, knowing he would get the question in the media center because he'd been out there talking about it.
Well, and no one's going to shy away from it. I do feel for Tom Watson, who suddenly looked a bit of a beaten man in every sense. And it's a shame because his golfing record is without, you know, amazing. And obviously nearly winning the Open a few years ago. He's loved by all and sundry over here to go with his previous Open championship wins. But clearly, the Americans have no idea how to galvanize their team into a unity that is reflected in a polar opposite by the Europeans. Rory McIlroy, the world number one golfer, saying that he was more nervous and revved up playing in today in his final match than he was when he goes on to win his majors, tells you everything you need to know that Tiger Woods is, again, the polar opposite. It does not fire him up in the same way. And if Rory McIlroy gets fired up with all he's already achieved by the Ryder Cup, you know that the 11 men also in that team were equally as fired up. Don't tell me that's the case in the U.S. team.
You know, it's amazing, Alex, when we look at Rory McIlroy, he's what? He's won four majors, and he's won three Ryder Cups, and he's 25 years old. You got to be kidding me.
Well, I mean, Rory played great today, and I really did expect to see him play great today, to be honest with you. I thought he struggled a lot during the first 2 days.
But how good was his performance?
No,
birdie, eagle, birdie.
It was tremendous.
And that look as he walked off after the first, it wasn't the fist pumping that we see from other players. It was just a quiet little wiggle of the fist and then a look on his face that said, right, I'm off and running here, yeah, and I'm not going to let you back into the game.
And it wasn't like he just beat, you know, a dead horse. I mean, Ricky Fowler's had a pretty good season.
That's true.
You know, so, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, if I'm Ricky Fowler, I need to look at myself in the mirror. I really do. I need to look at myself and say, okay, so now I just saw how someone that's the same age as me, basically, could beat me like a drum, and how did that happen? I would be sitting there spending my time dissecting exactly what just happened over the 14 holes that I got my ass handed to me, and I would start looking at what I need to do to get better.
Well, but it's not just him.
No, I understand that.
Jim Furyk, I mean, I have said, I know he played himself into the team, but he's a beaten man in this competition. You know, now 20 losses in, you know, you just think your team is full of losers, sadly.
Well, it's certainly turned out that way, hasn't it? Yes, it's quite interesting.
I mean, how painful does it have to be to Jim Furyk to have lost 20 times in the Ryder Cup? It doesn't even seem possible.
Well, I mean, you know, there's more. It's more than just Jim Furyk.
Obviously,
you know. So, but the bottom line is, look, nobody wants to lose. We're not. No one's coming here saying I want to lose. I want to come here for the good food and be able to play for free for 3 days. I mean, they're coming here to win. Now, when you lose, you know,
Scotland
obviously,
and food have never normally gone
right,
together,
exactly.
Alex. Actually, neeps and tatties is not something that people travel a million miles for.
But I think when we lose, meaning the U.S. team, when they lose, they don't take the time to really dissect what happened. And it's important. I mean, I think every loss is important. Most people say in individual competition, they learn more from the losses than they do from the wins. Well, what are we learning from the losses? It doesn't seem like we're learning anything.
Well, you're not even going back to the formula to help you win.
Well, that was the bone of contention. A couple of things of note, certainly the fact that Lee Westwood went by Seve Ballesteros in points earned playing in Ryder Cup. Quite an achievement for Lee Westwood. Have to give him his kudos. And Rory McIlroy, the first player since 1977. Ironically, it was Tom Watson that did it, winning two majors and a Ryder Cup in the same year. I mean, that stuff that truly legends are made of.
One thing I'll say about Westwood, he was hired to do a job. He was hired to escort around Jamie Donaldson for 2 days. Did a pretty good job of that.
He did more than that. He got his points. Thank you very much.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but that's exactly right.
Well, but that was because Paul McGinley had a focus. He's a man who's been playing Ryder Cup since 1997.
He had a plan.
Yeah, but
he had a plan.
But we know that when it came to people thinking, well, who are going to be the American wild card picks, you could have gone to anybody at that stage. The well wasn't very full. That was the problem at that stage, whereas the Europeans, he could have four or five other players who could have teamed in and made an impact.
I think that you will find in 16, Rupert, that we will change our timing on how we handle picks and selection of the entire team.
Well, Watson's excuse was, well, there's a logistical thing. Well, yeah. That's ridiculous.
You know what? Look, I'll pick them up personally is what his answer should have been and fly them in my jet if it makes the difference between having the better team here or not. And that really brings me to one other point. We didn't have the best team here, U.S. team here, and there was no way we were going to have the best team here. Tiger Woods was not on this team. Dustin Johnson was not on this team. Jason Duffner was not on this team. For no fault of anybody's or any system or logistics or anything else, they weren't on this team for other reasons. Does that make a difference? I don't know, but I do know this. We did not have our best team here this week. And then if you add in a Chris Kirk or a Billy Horschel, you really see that now we're talking about half the team would have been replaced. So it's a big difference.
Yes, but...
But it is what it is. This is where we are.
But I think that what you are alluding to, Alex, was the fact that they're not going to make any captain's picks till after the Tour Championship from here on out. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, we don't know when the Tour Championship's going to be. This is a one-off that we've had this problem before. In the past, we've never had this issue. This has never been a problem. In fact, I can remember the time when Tom Lehman picked Stewart Cink, and everybody was questioning why he picked Cink, and then the next week he won Bridgestone. So, I mean, you know, things happen. That's just how it is. But I think we have to look at this a different way. I found out today, by the way, which I never knew, I found in every past Ryder Cup, the home team was in charge of the setup. The captain was in charge of the setup. Yeah. This Ryder Cup, that was not the case. In the captain's agreement, they agreed that neither side would be involved in the setup of the golf course. And I had a conversation with someone today, and I said, why would you ever think that made sense? And they're like, well, the spirit of the competition. The spirit of the competition? What is that coming from?
Well, good job they didn't, because we might have been, for the American point of view, we might have won even more.
Well, but at the same time, McGinley was apologizing for the length of the rough, but he had no control over the length of the rough.
That was a weather thing.
Oh, baloney. There's no weather thing out there. When you take the Toro, go grab some Toros and run them through the rough. There's no problems with that, Rupert.
All right, let's focus a little bit on how well the European team played, Alex. And while we have Rupert here, he's broadcasting all over the world, so we got to make better use of his time. And not enough can be said, Rupert, and worked with you all week covering this Ryder Cup. And it was just amazing how well the European side performed.
I think from Justin Rose with his 4 points, he was just amazed with the way he played. He couldn't believe the way he teamed up with Henrik Stenson on that second day four balls, but he grafting his way to get a half point at the end in the singles just typified that will to never give up. And I think that's the key to the European performances. They know that even if they're three down, and remember Justin Rose was staring down a barrel early on in his match against Hunter Mahan, that he had put this run together. He kept digging, and that's what they do. And then the young guns coming on. You know, Victor Dubuisson, you know, everyone in America got to know him earlier in the year in the World Match Play, but he was helped with GMAC. There was some mentoring. There was some real thought to how to get the best out of it. He's enigmatic, is Dubuisson. He's not the easiest character, but yet he loved it and embraced the team ethic. From being a loner, he was very much one that the other 11 guys appreciated his efforts and what he did for the team.
I don't know how much difference it would have made, and I'd be interested to hear what Alex has to say. But Paul McGinley goes to Graham McDowell and says, Graham, G-Mac, I'm putting you out first. I want some blue on the board. G-Mac's three down after 9 holes to Jordan Spieth, and he flips that match around, gets the job done, puts that point up first. Would it have made a difference had Jordan Spieth gone on to win and then Patrick Reed wins behind him? We were 4 points down going in. With those two victories, we'd have only been 2 points behind Europe.
Well, you never know for sure, but certainly the winning formula in the past when teams have been down that much have been to get the color that they want on the board quickly. And that's what they did at Medina, and that's what they did at the Country Club. So it would have been I think it would have made a difference. I think, look, you needed everything to go your way if you were America today. It didn't. The Europeans showed that they could come back, and they did what Tom Watson said. They showed that they were champions today, and they were.
And Martin Keimer, Bubba Watson, I mean, he just didn't look interested or know how to deal with it all and didn't want to. You know, there were some real issues, but at least what you saw was a togetherness. You know, the sort of mantra of the week for Paul McGinley was no complacency. You know, that's what, and he brought in, obviously many listeners may not know, Sir Alex Ferguson, a Manchester United, very successful soccer boss, who was always the favourite. For once, the Europeans were deemed the favourite, so he brought him in to teach, to say, right, I know how to deal with always being the favourite, I'm teaching you. And so they already were aware, and if he tells them, They listened to his every word. So there was thought right from the top as to how to deal with being the favorite's tag.
One other thing, Alex, I think you'll get a kick out of this. We were at a party the other night, and who shows up but Martin Keimer's caddy, Craig Connolly. And we asked him about Sir Alex Ferguson coming to the team room, and he said he went into the team room, the caddies weren't allowed, and Sir Alex gave his talk, and the caddies were waiting in the adjacent room. Craig said he was sitting there, he had two lamb chops on his plate and three or four French fries. Sir Alex Ferguson walks over to him and says, "A little bit too much fat on that plate, boy." So Conley immediately threw away his lamb chops and French fries. But it's amazing. You know, Sir Alex, legendary over here. But once a winner, always a winner.
Yeah, and he was known for his hairdryer treatment. He threw a hairdryer at David Beckham, who listeners may have heard of, but was in his team. So the man has presence, but it's easy to hide behind. American have used ex-sportsmen before and everything, so we know that there are certain things that are done, but in a way there are still that it just felt the American tried too hard at this event. They talk about this endless having fun with the guys. If I hear that again, I want to scream. You're here, get over it. Gee, of course, if you can't have fun with these guys, you're young. I don't understand why they have to say the same old boring rubbish about fun, fun, fun. And that seems to me they've got to get into a different way to approach it. The way the Europeans say it, they seem to naturally embrace it. It's not laboured as everyone begins their statement in press conference. Well, we're having a lot of fun over here. I'm sorry. That's more to... They've got to look at the whole thing, even to the way the players talk to the media about it.
Can you believe, though, we went through a Ryder Cup and not once did I hear the word ping pong?
Oh, yeah. I did.
You did?
Yep. I in the press.
From who?
I think Phil Mickelson talking about beating Phil Mickelson. I had three or four references to ping pong.
Yeah. Phil talked about beating Phil. That had to be a heck of a match.
Well,
go ahead, Alex.
No. 15 all, okay.
Rupert Bell, we want to thank you for your time.
No problem.
Let's go back to all those people all over the world who want to hear from you. One person that's going to want to hear from us is going to be Ross Polk. Ross is the winner of the Pick the Winning Team contest. Couldn't have been too hard, Ross, right? Europe, no problem. Congratulations. There will be multiple people who pick Team Europe, but Ross was the one that was picked out of the hat, and I'm looking at the hat right now, so I know a hat does actually exist, and he will win a pair of Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. Congratulations, Ross. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's going to be more Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, and powered by Golf Week, where they take you inside the ropes.
You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
The outside light and weather change. Your sunglasses should, too. Transitions Adaptive Sunglass Lenses change their level of darkness depending on the light outside to enhance your vision during golf and other outdoor activities. Partnered with Callaway, Oakley, and Nike, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses increase contrast, improve distance and depth perception, and reduce distracting glare so you can see the game you love even better. Visit transitions.com/sunwear to learn more and buy a pair today.
The light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that. Nike and Transitions Optical have collaborated to create a new lens technology that is both responsive to light and specifically engineered to sport performance. Nike Max Transitions Golf Tint Sunglasses will help improve contour recognition on the golf course and increase ball pop. You'll literally see your game in a whole new light. Buy a pair today at Nike.com.
The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.
All right, we're back in the Grill Room. Alex Maselli, Bob Bupka here at the 40th Ryder Cup, sitting up top the media center, looking down on some of the attending media. Anyways, we're here. We're excited. Well, we're excited because we're going home. You'll be out of your snooze box or whatever that thing is. I'll be back out of the police facility, the place that I stayed, back home in the good old United States where a hot dog is actually a hot dog and a Coke is actually a Coke.
I hope they let you out of that police facility.
Yeah, I know.
They may do a background check. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know.
Oh, I got to tell you something.
Go ahead.
I got to tell you something. You'll love this. So Jack Nicklaus came here this week, came here today on Sunday.
Let's congratulate him.
On what? On the awards?
On the award.
Okay. Congrats to him on the awards. One was from the European Tour, honorary member of the European Tour. One was from the Ryder Cup itself for his contributions to the Ryder Cup. Is that what you wanted to hear?
That's what I wanted to hear.
Okay. So he flies in from Raleigh, North Carolina, where he was watching his grandson play in the North Carolina State-Florida State game. Had to hang around a long time because that game got pretty close. Eventually they won. He was about 3 minutes left before he left. Jumps on this plane, flies all the way to Dundee, which is where a private airport was. Gets in. Immigration says, sir, your documentation is not exactly proper. And he spent about an hour trying to get through the immigration there, where they finally said, we will let you go, but we're going to have to hold your passports. So Jack Nicklaus was having a hard time getting inside the country of Scotland. So he's an hour late, can't change clothes, gets the awards you just talked about, in the same clothes he was wearing at the Florida State, North Carolina State game. Then he comes back, changes, does Sky, some other stuff, spends a little time with me, actually. Then goes over to the Rolex booth. Now he's getting back on his plane, and guess where he's going? Turkmenistan. Just in case you're wondering, Turkmenistan.
Where is that?
Former Russian Federation property. There is a small country where they're having an Asian event of some type in like 2 or 3 years from now, and they need a golf course, and I think Jack's going to be the guy. So Jack goes from Raleigh to Dundee to Turkmenistan, just as an aside, Bobby.
Not many people have made that trip. It certainly was great getting to see Jack Nicklaus. All right, let's talk a little bit about the real stars of the U.S. squad. I think it's pretty cut and dry. We've got to give it to Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth.
That's
they
it.
Came up big.
That's it. That's it. And then, really, you know, you think about this. If Patrick Reed doesn't miss a tiddler, as they say here, it's 4-0. And I'm going to tell you right now, considering our record in Ryder Cup, finding an American that could go 4-0 is pretty rare indeed.
I think he silenced a lot of critics when, after winning that World Golf Championship event last year, he proclaimed himself, I think I'm one of the top five players in the world. And everybody, you know, really made fun of him.
I'd vote for him now.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, he's got a lot of confidence. He performed well in a big stage. On the European side, Alex, you know, the true star is the star. He's the number one player in the world, and he delivered the goods.
Rory played well. Justin Rose played better, but in both cases they were the ones that led this team to victory. There was no question about it, but everybody played their roles very, very well. If it was Donaldson, if it was Westwood, if it was McDowell, if it was Dubuisson, everybody played their roles well, which is what you need. You can't always have the stars, can't always be the guys. Sometimes you got to have a good supporting cast, and the Europeans had a great supporting cast.
Let's take a minute to focus on vision, brought to you by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses. We're so glad we had our Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses here at the Ryder Cup this week. Scottish weather certainly had plenty of variable lighting conditions. Sun 1 minute, gray and overcast the next, and then sun again. As the commercial says, when the light changes, the lens changes. It's as simple as that, and that was certainly the case this week here at Glen Eagles. Please visit transitions.com/sunwear for all the information you need. Buy a pair today.
All right, you're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses and powered by Golf Week. It's been a glorious week here at Glen Eagles, and now begins to trek back to the United States. Normally, we now go to what's next on the schedule or news and notes, but there's almost nothing on the schedule this week, and the only news we've gotten today is the European Tour has made Jack Nicklaus, who designed the Glen Eagles course, an honorary member of the European Tour. We talked about that, and I guess the other news, Bobby, is clear. The Europeans have won another Ryder Cup, disgracing the Americans again. That's what it is. That's what it's going to be. Two more years of panic in the U.S. ranks before we get to Hazeltine. So, all right, I'll say congratulations to the Europeans for a great job. Well done. Hopefully in 2 years I am congratulating a U.S. team captained by, obviously, someone else. This is it for this week. It's been all about the Ryder Cup this week. And again, congratulations to Team Europe on their fantastic win. You're listening to The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, and is powered by Golf Week, where you go inside the ropes.
A big thank you to our partners, Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses, equipment for a visual advantage, and the Golf Week. So for Janice Self, Alex Bowtie Maselli, Rupert Bell, and myself, Bob Bubka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in The Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room, presented by Transitions Adaptive Sunglasses.